Remember Utah, remember.
Harris to serve as mayor pro tem for this meeting.
I'll second.
Should we have a second? All in favor? Say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Cue. Alright, welcome to the city council study meeting. We excuse our mayor for this meeting. She will plan on being here for our following meeting, but she has a matter that's taken her away from this meeting. So I will, in her behalf, act as the mayor pro tempore. So we have all the council members here. So thank you for being here and thank you for city staff for all that you've done to prepare for this meeting today. We'll go ahead and start out with an invocation by Brian Priest.
Our kind and gracious Father in heaven, we're so thankful at this time of year, this time of Thanksgiving, for all the blessings that are bestowed on us. We're thankful for this beautiful place we live in, and we're thankful for the opportunity we have to serve those people that live in the city and provide businesses for the city, that we can help them and do the things for them. We ask thee to bless all those that serve and protect us, both from the city, statewide, and in the nation, that they can be protected and kept from harm. And we say these things humbly in Jesus' name. Amen. Amen.
All right. Thank you, Brian. We'll move on to mayor and council coordination. Does anyone have anything that they'd like to discuss?
The only item I wanted to bring up was that this Saturday is the Jordan Education Foundation's Christmas for Kids, and they still need some chaperones that morning. And with that, you do need to pre-register, but you go around with one of the selected students and take them through the Walmart and help them shop. And it's always a great experience, great support by our police department. And so if you're available Saturday morning, just encourage you to sign up to be a chaperone for that event.
Do you have that contact?
Yeah, I can send out a text to everyone. There's multiple times, so I'll just send you guys the link.
All right.
We've signed up for time, I remember.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Jason.
That's everything, Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you. Anything else?
I'm curious, somebody told us about judging the gingerbread houses.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Do you know? I'm sure you don't, but can
I don't have the information.
Us?
Yes, I have judging clipboards by my seat, so after.
That was tonight, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Do you still need help with that, Janelle?
Yes, if you will.
If you'll just stick a clipboard in my face, I'm happy.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll do that as well. It's always kind of fun to see the gingerbread houses, huh?
I love them.
Yeah, it's fun. All righty. Any other items?
So I'm planning on going to the Fulmer thing tomorrow night at the Open House. Anybody else going or?
I'm here.
Does anybody have details on that? I saw the email and I'm unclear.
It's just an open house. Have some refreshments and.
What was the location? I looked at it and it wasn't.
The
community center.
Ah, okay.
It should be in your calendar.
Okay. I saw the email. I didn't see the calendar. And then Light the Night is this Friday.
5:30. Janelle, do you just want to give them their details now?
Yeah. So meet here at 5:30 in the Balsam Conference Room.
It's the one by my office.
Yes. And then we will do on the stage just before 6 for the countdown. And Colby Hill will be your contact and meet you at the in the conference room.
Council, what else? Anything we need to discuss? Dustin, do you have anything that we need to review?
Nope.
Okay. Well, let's move on to item D, discussion review of the regular council meeting. We have a presentation item, thank you and welcoming for elected officials. Dustin, anything you'd like to share with that?
No, unless there's other questions tonight, you have a couple items on your agenda. We'll be doing a presentation, recognition, and thank you for some of our currently serving legislators. Attorney Luce has put that together to recognize them and to welcome the new ones that will be serving with us. I don't think we were able to get all of them here tonight, so the ones that we could get here we'll recognize.
So the ones that have confirmed of Representative Pulsper,
okay.
Thank you for her, I think, 4 terms, or 3 terms. And then Representative-elect Miller will be here for sure Representative Tesher is coming from a leadership meeting, so he's going to try to be here in time, but I think his meeting gets over to Capitol about 6, and so he'll be pushing it. Representative Lech Fiafia wishes he could be here. He's at a board conference, and I didn't hear from Senator Fillmore, Representative Cobb. And I know the mayor communicated with Representative Elis. I'm not sure whether he's able to make it tonight or not.
Following that, it's an item that was originally on your agenda back, I believe, in October on the Leading Acres land use. We held a public hearing that evening, received a lot of feedback. After your discussion, you tabled that item. This is bringing that item back with several of the things that you wanted to have looked at and readdressed. So that'll be back. And then we do have two items that will be scheduled for public hearings tonight. The first is the adopting of the South Jordan track station area plan. That's a requirement that we have to have. We've been working to get that put together, and this plan will be presented tonight for your consideration for adoption. We do need to have that plan in place in order for them to open the new track station later in the early part of 2025. So, and then the other one is a change to our current ordinance. We've talked about it before. It amends our alcohol ordinance to allow the packaging licenses. That's the specific license that the state grants to entities so that they can store beverages on site to use for their, so for example, they can have their own case of wine on site and then provide that for a banquet or an enterprise. So sometimes you'll see hotels have these so that they can do guest service for a bottle of wine. Stadiums sometimes need this so that they can have their supply of beverages for their suites, things like that. Our previous ordinance didn't have that inclusion, and this amendment tonight includes that inclusion. So.
Now, are we obligated by state, by the state, to approve this?
Oh,
we're not obligated. It's your choice. It's a license that's issued by the state. This allows, if you adopt this in the ordinance, it allows us to allow businesses to apply to the state to get that license.
Okay. Just storing of.
Yeah, it basically allows them to order and operate like their own kind of an internal liquor store. So it has kind of the same kind of authority like a liquor store would to buy cases and have them stored on their premise. So that if you, for example, if you went to a hotel and they were having a banquet,
they can
you could have a bottle of water or bottle of wine brought out there for your guests.
Mm-hmm.
Without that, they're not able to do that without the uncorking fees and all the other types of things. And then if it's not used, let's say you had a wedding reception at the hotel and they had a whole case and you only used 6 bottles, they could return that back to their storage. Whereas without this, they would have to open them all and it would be.
So this doesn't conflict at all with the current liquor or alcohol laws that we have with the 2 bars and we've got.
No, this has nothing to do with the bars.
It's just allowing venues to have alcohol, okay?
Yep, it allows them to basically buy it from the state, store it at their venue for whenever they, so they could buy their 6-month supply, and then they're able to track it internally and do those things.
Yeah. It was the bees that kind of initiated all this, right?
Well, that, our hotels, there are others that might do that. It's not common. The baseball stadium would be one because of their suites that would probably apply for this license from the state. But some of our hotels might also have an interest in that if they do a lot of banquets and those kinds of things.
And so the state is the one who will have
the state. Yeah, the state is the one that issues that. And if you read in there, our police, our business licensing officials, the state, they can go on premise at any time to make sure it's all in compliance.
Thank you.
And then, Dustin, just getting back to the Weeden Acres, in the next meeting, how much are we going to be talking about just that specific project, but just versus talking overall, what it looks like on flag lots and
it's a great question. Tonight, the issue before you is the Weeden Acres.
So,
as you remember, in our last meeting, you did adopt a notice that we were putting any future applications on hold to give you time to work that out. That doesn't apply to tonight's discussion.
That'll be a separate meeting.
That'll be a separate
meeting. So we don't want to engage in that conversation. That's going to be a separate meeting that we're going to have for that.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, tonight you have to weigh this out on the merits under the existing code.
Okay.
But there is a pause on that, so there are no new applications coming in until you have a chance after the first of the year to meet and discuss that. Certainly the things that you learn or, you know, get a sense for tonight, you can talk about later in that to say, hey, we liked this, we didn't like this, we should change this or change that. But it doesn't apply to tonight's conversation.
Council, any other questions or comments on our regular council meeting? Okay. All right. Well, we'll move on to item E, the Shields Lane Solutions Update by Deputy City Transportation Engineer Jeremy Nielsen. If you want to come join us up here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor Pro Tem and City Council members. So it's been a couple of months since we were here last talking about Shields Lane, and we wanted to meet with you before our next public open house, which will be next week. It'll be on Wednesday of next week from 5 to 7, and you're all welcome to come to that as well. But we wanted to get in front of you before we did that open house so you knew what was going to be presented to the public. Since we last met, we did a big public survey on four concepts that were presented last time we were here. And so tonight we're going to kind of show you which one was the front runner and some of the things that we've learned from that public engagement that we've done. And so with that, we've got Kai here with Parametrics and Tim here with Township and Range, and they've been awesome to help us on this project, and especially with all the public engagement efforts that we've been doing. So I'll turn it over to them.
Thanks, Jeremy. So just real quick, today we'll be talking through a number of things. We'll be revisiting, you know, the reasoning behind this project and why we're doing it. Tim will provide an update on the public engagement and what we've learned so far. And then we'll kind of dive into some of the details on the preferred concept and some of our implementation and funding strategies for moving forward. So just to begin and remind everyone kind of the significance of this project, firstly, it's been highlighted and promoted in the general plan as a corridor that should receive high quality bike and pedestrian facilities. There's interest in additional east-west pedestrian trails in the city, also highlighted in the general plan. And so this is really in line with that plan. And then of course, as enhanced active transportation facility that we're proposing, there's a number of benefits to the community, including safer routes to schools, promoting exercise and health for your residents, affordable transportation options, recreational opportunities, and with all that, kind of general social life and well-being for your residents. And then looking at how it fits in with the overall context of active transportation within the city, this map kind of seeks to lay that out. So you can see in red the corridor we're studying, which is Bangor to Interstate 15. And it does have some unique attributes with the at-grade or the grade-separated crossing at Bangor with the pedestrian bridge, which is getting improved with the new structure. And then on the east side, Shields Lake goes under I-15 outside of an interchange, which is a fairly unique opportunity for getting active transportation users across that major barrier without having to navigate an interchange. In addition to that, you can see how it connects up a number of existing and planned trail facilities. So it connects to the Jordan River Parkway, which sees heavy usage, over 9,000 visitors annually in this area. And then it's connecting up three future canal trails that intersect the corridor. And then just to the west along Sky Drive, it connects to the Welby Canal Trail and also the Bingham Creek Trails. In addition to that, you're also providing connections to transit with the Front Runner Station. And if you look at the corridor in conjunction with Sky Drive, you're also making a connection up to the track station to the west. And so you can see how it's a really key connection point to a comprehensive network of trails for the entire city. And you're also providing those benefits to the local residents that live along the corridor. And looking a little bit more regionally, you're connecting to neighboring communities and amenities to the east and west. To the west, you've got connections to the East Bench with the Bingham Creek Trail. And if you look a little bit further east, there's opportunities to connect to the Port of Rockwell Trail in Sandy. So it's a really important and critical connection. There aren't a lot of east-west trail facilities in the city, particularly in this northern section. And there's really not a lot in the entire county. So it presents a really important and unique opportunity to provide this type of facility.
That's a great map, by the way. That's really good.
Thank you. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you. So with that, I'll turn it over to Tim to kind of go over the public engagement.
Yeah. So it's great to be talking to you guys again. Last time we were here, we went through a variety of different alternative concepts for Shields Lane that we developed in conjunction with our stakeholder committee and our project team. And so we can go through these just to review these real quick. Kai might be better to kind of going through and summarizing what these different alternatives were.
Yeah, sure, I can do that. So our concept one was kind of a minimally invasive solution looking at on-street buffered bike lanes with some potential enhancements with some separation. Concept two was an on-street a dual direction cycle track on one side of the road. The benefits of both these first two concepts were they are not moving the curb line, and so they're relatively low cost, low impact. Concept three was looking at moving the south curb north and incorporating a multi-use trail on the south side of the road and narrowing down the pavement width, and it still preserves a three-lane configuration, so you don't have a lot of impacts to existing traffic operations, but you can incorporate a multi-use trail. And then the final concept was bringing both curbs in on either side and incorporating a grade separated or raised bike lane on either side of the road. And so that would be the most impactful because you're impacting both curb lines on both sides of the road.
So following our conversation, yes?
Could you go back?
Yeah, sure.
I'm just curious, on concept four,
mm-hmm.
is that the only one that has an elevated grade, or did three also have an elevated grade?
So with concept three, the new facility is above curb, and so we would basically be replacing the sidewalk with a wide multi-use pathway.
So in three and four, you've raised the area where pedestrians and bikes are. So there's a curb between them and the cars.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, after we spoke with you last time, we held a public open house and also did some online engagement as well for those that weren't able to make the open house. We got about almost 60 people to the public open house, and the key way that people responded about the alternatives was through a survey where they stated their preferences about the different alternatives as well as other aspects to the concepts, both from a multiple choice standpoint and then some open-ended questions as well. So we got 254 responses to that survey, and then we also got a few open-ended comments through our comment cards. So I'm going to go through what we heard from those, primarily through the survey, but through other ways and conversations with people, other ways people commented, left comments at the open house. But the overwhelming conclusion was that concept three was everyone's, not everyone's favorite concept, but it was the leading concept. It was the most popular one. And so concept three, again, being the multi-use path that would replace the trail on the south side of the street. That would be, you know, a wide pathway that would, you know, be open to bicycling, walking, strolling, rolling, skating, scooting, all different types of active transportation and recreation. And so, you know, I think respondents from the survey, you know, we like looking at both the open-ended responses and you know, some of the multiple choice questions. They really like the separation for people biking, walking, jogging, and using other active modes, so that sense of safety. You can see here that you know, on the average rating question, concept three. I mean, they're you know, it's relatively close, but you can kind of see how that was the most popular for when we asked people to rate the concepts on a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being strongly don't like, 2 being do not like, 3 being neutral, 4 being like, and then 5 is strongly like. That's how they stacked up. What was interesting to us was that that concept three, we asked about the kind of the key goal areas for the project. So pedestrian and bicycle mobility, you know, was one area. We wanted to separate those out and understand what people liked for pedestrian mobility, what people liked for bicycle mobility. And then we also asked about just that fostering community, that sense of place on Shields Lane as kind of a different aspect of what we were trying to achieve. And then also balancing the active transportation with kind of the motor vehicle accessibility, the bigger picture solution, making sure it works for traffic in the context of the city. And concept three actually was most popular for all of those. It was kind of close with bicycle mobility, with the one with the concept four with the raised bike lanes. But for all the others, it was the most popular by a pretty comfortable margin. So, you know, in essence, from our perspective, concept three seemed to create the most benefits for the most people. And then it also got the most green dots. So one of the things that we did at the open house was hand out green and red dots, green for things that people liked, red for things that they didn't like. So it was a lot more kind of interactive, tactile way for people to give feedback. And you can see concept three, the number of green dots it got you know, the most. Concept four also was somewhat popular in this way. So that's another way, you know, which, you know, kind of seemed to be the most popular concept. We also asked what were the favorite elements, regardless of what concept they belonged to. So, you know, whether it was an amenity that was included, or a type of configuration of the street, or the you know, the active transportation facility. You know, what was really driving what people wanted the most? And, you know, the shared use path was the number one thing. But keeping the center turn lane also pretty popular, and that was something that's you know, stayed in our concept. Preserving existing trees, so also important to people. So you know, and on the way down, you know, some other things that were more and you know, less important to people. We also asked about you know, the things that weren't necessarily in the concepts that were important to people. So, for example, smooth pavement ended up being the most popular thing. That was the biggest priority. But in addition to that, actually small micro park spaces along the corridor, so small kind of public spaces, as well as, you know, a few things having to do with safe and high quality crossings as well. So those things helped the team, I think, once we select a concept, really guide kind of how that might be implemented and some of those details.
Can you go back there? The small micro park spaces, is that something we presented, that idea, or is that just people showed up, came out, had that idea?
No, these were all things we asked about.
So you were asking about that, so a lot of people wanted those small micro parks on Shields.
Maybe give them an example of what we mean by
small
micro.
Was there a concept
that
we presented?
Like the park benches? And
yeah,
the,
just
you know,
like a
the,
small like a small place to sit and just kind of, you know, maybe some small play spaces, maybe some public art, something like that. Just like a place that, you know, evokes the, you know, the neighborhood, place to gather,
yeah.
You know, a small plaza.
So this wasn't specifically called out in any of the four concepts that we proposed, but basically with this question, we tried to identify all the other things that could potentially be incorporated into a concept, and just to see how people might react to that. So this wasn't open-ended.
Yeah,
these were just a bunch of choices that people could say they like or didn't like.
Yeah.
So follow-up to that, on Shields Lane, the majority of it has cinder block walls, mm-hmm. sidewalk, and then trees, and then street. So is it even feasible to create small park spaces on a street that, I mean, I think I understand what residents are looking for. It's very much an artery. It's like a linear artery, and there's no place to really pause. Mm-hmm. So it sounds to me like my mind is saying they're looking for a spot they could pause along the way and stop mm-hmm. and enjoy themselves. Yeah. Where would that even be feasible?
So we're going to show something in a minute that kind of shows how we might incorporate this a little bit. Maybe not to the full extent that you might imagine with like a micro park with a lot of amenities, but there's definitely opportunities to incorporate like a bench and
sure.
a place to park.
Yeah, I think it's a nice way to put it.
Yeah.
You know, it could be one along at one of the schools, could be like a collaboration with one of the schools and creating that type
yeah.
of space.
That's true.
But yeah, there are a lot of locations like that necessarily. Maybe it's where the canal crosses, you know, and there's some space there. That's kind of a little node.
Yeah, thank you.
The schools are all on the north side of the road, and you're talking about
in the south side.
The trail being on the south side of the road, right?
That's right.
That's true.
Yeah.
What's the reason?
So if we're seriously going to collaborate with them, would we not move the trail to the north
side? So, yeah, the side of the trail was definitely a key consideration. The reasoning behind the south side was because it lines up with the Ped crossing at Bangor, the bridge,
oh.
and the trailhead for the Jordan River Parkway. And with the opportunities to provide really good crossings, we felt like we could accommodate the schools pretty well. In addition, with the concept, we're narrowing the crossing distance by bringing that curb in a little bit. And we can also incorporate features like a little median island so that people don't have to cross the entire road all at once if they don't have to. So we're really trying to, we recognize like all the schools are on the other side, but we're trying to tie into them as best as possible
yeah.
at the same time. All right, so based on what he just presented and the outcomes of the engagement, I think it probably comes to no surprise that you know, our preferred concept is the multi-use path. And so just to kind of reiterate that point, we have moved forward with some of our work with that assumption that is the preferred concept that's in line with the public. And so this is just, again, some of the details of what that looks like.
Can you help me out? My ancient eyes can't focus on those numbers there. So is that multi-use path 12 feet?
Yeah, so the multi-use path, depending on where we are on the section, but the multi-use path would be 12 to 14 feet wide is what we're proposing.
Oh, no,
which is a pretty generous width. And then the park strip would be 7 to 9 feet, which again it would be a wider park strip that's currently on the ground today on the corridor. And then we're looking at 10-foot travel lanes and a 10-foot turn lane. And so some of the width we're gaining is in those travel lanes. The side benefit there with narrow travel lanes is it should help reduce the vehicle speeds a little bit and calm the traffic a little bit. Right now we're seeing the average speed along the corridor, 35 to 37 miles an hour, which is above the posted speed limit. So we're hoping this can help us bring those vehicle speeds down to the legal
speed What is limit. The posted speed limit on 98?
It's 30.
It's 25 30. To 30.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's pretty much 30 except for between 13th and 10th. It's posted at 25.
Excuse me.
Sure.
So you're narrowing the lanes to 10 foot. What are they now, Jeremy?
We do have some between Redwood Road and 1300 West. They're 10-foot lanes right now because we added buffered bike lanes through that stretch. But the rest of the sections, 11 to 12-foot lanes, you know, is where they're striped right now.
Mm-hmm. So with, you know, with...
Councilwoman Zander, do you have a question?
I do, thank you. Existing trees, if we went with this concept, how many of the existing trees would be preserved?
So, you know, this is kind of the middle ground with the concepts with impacts to trees. So the north side of the road, we would not be touching the existing configuration. Also, all the existing trees on the north side would remain untouched. Fortunately, on the south side, with this, we would be moving the park strip in to the road so that we would have impacts to all the existing street trees on the south side. We're proposing they'd all be replaced, but that would be an impact.
Okay, mm-hmm. Thank you.
So you're saying replace, like they would have to completely cut them out, get rid of them, and then just you're planting new, fresh, younger trees.
Yeah, so basically where the existing trees are now is where the multi-use path is planned to go.
Okay. How hard are those trees out there right now? Are those trees, I'm trying to remember the varieties, are those trees, some of the problematic ones that raise the sidewalks now that we have to do a lot of work on? Or
so right now, the most significant trees is a batch of sycamores,
okay.
Which are the nicest trees, but also the ones that have the most impacts to the sidewalks. And so it's kind of a, you know, good and bad with that because you'd be minimizing that potential future impact to the sidewalk damaging. But also they are the kind of the nicest trees along the corridor.
So does this then with the trees, Councilmember Zander, if you want to jump in on trees too, feel free.
Yeah,
I know you love your trees.
I have sycamores in front of my house, so I love them.
Me too.
But this does allow us to focus on having trees there, but then we would, as we're cutting that, we plant different trees that are going to be less impactful moving forward in that same area. Is that kind of what the plan would be?
Yeah, we haven't specified the, you know, type of trees,
no.
But we would have the opportunity to
yeah,
be mindful of
that.
What we would put there. The other thing to consider is there is overhead power lines on the north side, and so that was another consideration of why the south side might be a little bit better. It does switch to the south side further east, but I think a larger stretch of the corridor has the power lines on the north. So we're kind of avoiding the impact of having to relocate the power lines with this concept. Cool. So with this new configuration, we wanted to look at how that might impact traffic operations. And one of the questions we asked in the first survey was, what are people's willingness to potentially accept a few more minutes of delay in driving in exchange for a safer, more comfortable, and more convenient experience along the corridor? Because we knew there might be some potential impacts to traffic as we explore options. Now, with this concept, we aren't actually changing the configuration. We're preserving the three lanes. We're just reducing the travel lane widths. And so there's not a huge impact in operations, but we are trying to encourage slower speeds. But when asking this question, we found that a majority of people are actually willing to make that trade-off. When you look at people who are neutral, willing, extremely willing, that's about a little over 60% of people that were willing to make a trade-off between travel times and an improved corridor for walking and biking. Yes?
So I just want to make sure I understood you correctly. So I mean, just do the number of lanes staying the same, traffic flow is going to stay about the same, but just because the lanes are narrowing, it's going to encourage people to do closer to the speed limit.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what's going to change the travel times. It's just it's going to push people closer to the speed limit
mm-hmm.
versus actually the actual flow.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yep. And so So what we did is we actually modeled it. So part of our work in existing conditions, we developed a traffic model of the corridor and have an established travel time for the corridor from Bangor to I-15 in each direction based on the observed speed limit, based on the observed speed. So that's 35 to 37 miles an hour. And then what we did is just, you know, based upon the new configuration, assuming that people might actually drive that posted speed limit. So we assumed people were driving that 25 to 30 miles an hour. We modeled what that would do to travel times for the entire corridor.
I'm just
going to
say, probably not going to happen.
I thought that was just a suggestion.
Yeah.
So based on the existing condition and people actually going the speed limit, what we're seeing is an increase in 2 minutes of travel time for each direction in the PM peak. And what that amounts to is a 15% increase eastbound and a 12% increase westbound. So we felt like that was a pretty, digestible impact for people because this is what they should be doing anyway, right? And it's not a huge, increase. But the benefit is we are improving the conditions for the active users, bikes, peds, you know, other people utilizing the trail. And so another thing that we measured in our existing conditions was the existing level of traffic stress. So this is a measurement of a user's experience based upon their exposure to vehicle traffic. And what we found was with the new concept, a 33% increase of level of, or not increase, a 33% improvement of level of traffic stress for pedestrians, and a 46% increase, or not increase, improvement of level of traffic stress for cyclists. So we're seeing pretty minimal impacts for travel times for drivers, and pretty significant benefits to pedestrians, cyclists, and other active users with the concept.
I think also one thing to mention is, you know, we didn't talk about the results from the open-ended question that we asked. But, you know, we asked the question, what drove your responses to the survey? And the number one thing was a better bike pedestrian experience, separation from moving traffic. And the second thing was traffic calming and say, you know, slower traffic. So these things kind of go hand in hand, right?
Mm-hmm. So we felt that it was pretty important to tell the story because people, I think, are going to be concerned about, you know, how that impacts their day to day, you know, driving to work or whatever. And it shouldn't be a huge impact there. And then there's also this huge benefit. So with that, moving forward, we wanted to kind of convey what this actually is going to look like so we can kind of really tell the story. And so what Tim and his team has done is developed a render of, photo simulation of what this would look like if implemented. So basically what they did is took this existing image of the corridor. This is nearby one of the elementary schools, and then did a Photoshop simulation of what it would look like there with the concept in place. So if you want to drag that over.
So pay attention to how the park strip and the trail kind of shifts things over a bit.
Look how smooth those roads are.
Yeah, smooth roads too.
They're so nice.
And was this the older one? We had a bench in there.
Is this Jordan?
Yeah, it cuts off some of this on the left side.
Oh, can you continue? Oh, can you continue sliding all the way to the?
There we go.
Okay.
No problem. Didn't show anything on the picture.
Yeah, the picture was only so much, and they kind of expanded. And so to kind of wind back, when we're talking about the little parks and opportunities to pause, we're kind of showing how that might work here, where we've instituted a bit of a shoulder on the south side of the trail and incorporated a bench, some wayfinding, a trash receptacle. And this might be something that could be placed periodically along the corner, maybe at crossing opportunities that could give people that kind of opportunity to pause as they're going along the corridor. And so, you know, you can kind of see how you're really reducing the width of the pavement, but still preserving the three-lane configuration. You're reducing the crossing distance. You know, hopefully once the trees mature a little bit, this is what it could look like.
How expensive is it to put trees on that whole road? On one side?
Well, we'll get to cost in a minute, and we have incorporated landscaping into our cost okay. estimate. If you want to go back to the... Okay, so next is, you know, we've looked at implementation of this a little bit, and because it is quite a long corridor, it's about 4 miles in total. What we've done is we've broken it up into three phases or segments so that we can kind of tackle it in pieces as we seek funding and look to construct this. So we've phased it from west to east. So the first phase being Bangor to 2200 West. We felt like that made sense because we're taking advantage of that new improved crossing at Bangor. You're connecting to all the schools with that first phase, and it's a little bit simpler environment. Fewer houses fronting, fewer accesses along the corridor in that segment. The next segment is 2200 West to 1000 West, and then the final phase is 1000 West to I-15. We also looked at some options for funding, and then some opportunities for an immediate intervention, low-cost solution that we could potentially incorporate on the near term while we're looking for funding to build the ultimate vision. So for that first phase, what we've done is a detailed concept layout of that entire segment. And so what this shows is we've broken it into 6 chunks and have done it like a detailed layout of what that would look like and from a design standpoint. And from that, we've been able to develop a detailed cost estimate. For phases 2 and 3, we've taken a snapshot of some key points of interest to kind of answer what people will be curious about how this might work for the segments they might be most interested in. And so for phase 2, we've looked at how the canal crossing might work, how that would work, the medical access, the Redwood Road intersection. We've looked at how we might incorporate some and preserve some on-street parking, because that was a concern for some individuals. We're looking at another canal crossing and then the 1300 West intersection. And then for phase 3, we've got the Jordan River trailhead, Jordan Gateway intersection, the railroad crossing, and 300 West intersection. So before we kind of get at that cost estimate, just again a reminder, you know, of why this is such an important corridor to the city, to the region, to the local community. But we did do a detailed cost estimate for that phase 1 based on that concept layout. And so for the first segment, Bangor to 2200 West, the initial concept or cost estimate is $12 million. From that, we extrapolated the whole corridor cost at $32 million. Now, that's a lot of money, but we did want to put it into context a little bit. And we looked at the current estimate for the 106 South widening project for a similar length of corridor. Is $85 million. So, you know, over double the cost. And if we rewind back, that was the original proposal for this corridor, was to do a widening in one lane direction. And also keep in mind, 106 South has the right of way to widen. And so if we were to widen, you know, Shields Lane, not only would it, you'd have the construction cost, but there'd be the right-of-way impacts and the costs associated with that as well. So, you know, in general,
Could that be to Redwood to Lake Run? Because I don't think 106 actually intersects.
Yeah, it's Lake Run is the one that I think runs.
Yeah, so this is two projects identified in the WFRC RTP that we combined.
But you probably want to, if we're going to publish this, probably want to put Lake Run in there instead of Lake.
Councilman Shelton, it's up to Lake Avenue, which is that second roundabout just to the west of Harmon's. That's what's in the regional transportation plan that they're showing right now.
Second roundabout west of Harmon's.
Lake Avenue on one side and Split Rock, or
Silver Mine.
So that's way west.
That is Lake Avenue if you turn south.
Right, that crossroad is Lake Avenue on one side, Silver Mine on the other. Yeah.
So I took these two projects because it was approximately 4 miles, which is the same length as our corridor. So it'd be, you know, apples to apples as best as we can. Just as a point of comparison, you know, so we're looking at something that's a lot less costly than widening, less impactful, but then provides all the benefits that we've been talking about. For the open house, I don't think the plan is to show the cost estimates, but we felt it would be important to share it with the council.
Thank you.
Yeah. So how are we gonna come up with the money? We have some ideas. There are definitely a few options for that. So that with state funds, there's the TIF active funding source that's looking, that provides funding for non-motorized pedestrian transportation projects that mitigate congestion on the state highway system. You know, the whole corridor would be a potential candidate. With the work that we've done on segment one or phase one, the city would be basically have all the information they need to nominate the project for that. There's also the TTIF first and last mile funding source that's looking at non-motorized projects to connect to public transit systems. And with the proximity of the Front Runner on the east side, the third segment could be a potential candidate for that funding source. And then also there's the Utah Trail Network that the state's developing, that's developing, you know, paved trails throughout the state that connect all Utahns to destinations and communities. And based on the same benefits that map we showed, we feel like this could be a really good potential candidate for that program as well, because it has such good regional significance. It's connecting a lot of regional facilities.
Just one more comment on the cost estimate. We did present this to the stakeholder committee last week, and Wasatch Front Regional Council and UDOT are both sit on that committee, and they supported that cost estimate. They said that's in line with what they're seeing with other corridors, you know, for this type of facility. And both representatives from Wasatch Front Regional Council and UDOT have expressed interest to me. They're really interested to see how this study turns out and how supportive the public is of this concept. And so I think there's a lot of potential to get funding, you know, for this type of a project, grant funding.
So other funding options, there's the WFRC Transportation Improvement Program. And this, you know, active transportation projects are eligible for that funding source. And Jeremy's already started the nomination process for the first segment for that funding source. And then finally, there's actually right now a lot of really great federal grants for just this type of project. There's a number currently active, and I think for this project in particular, that the Active Transportation Infrastructure Investment Program, the ATIF, probably would make the most sense, but there's other options for federal grants as well. And so, you know, between the state funds and the federal funds, it seems like there's a lot of really good potential opportunities to fund this project outside of, you know, regular city funds. And then finally,
do we have a goal or an estimate of how much, what percent
we think we might be able to get from state, federal grants, other funds before it taps in that we're hoping to get?
The match kind of varies. I mean, the lowest grant is like a 7% match. That's, you know, that'd be our lowest match. And then, but then there's other grants that are 40% match. So it depends on which.
That's good to know. And then just in addition to that, like of the $32 million, how much do we think that we might be able to, we're hoping to raise through these grants?
We haven't really gone that deep on what we would expect our share would be on that.
Okay.
On that 30 million. But yeah, depending upon what grant we were to pursue, anywhere from 7% to 40% would be the city's cost.
Okay.
But it depends on which grant, you know, if you're successful in one grant or the other, you know, so it's kind of hard to predict. Worst case scenario would be a 40% match.
Yeah. Okay. So the TIF Active program is a 40% match. The TTIF First Last Mile is 30% match. If it were to get selected for the Utah Trail Network, there wouldn't be a match. UDOT would take that on wholesale. And that would likely be essentially a longer time frame, though. So we might be working on maybe segment one, figuring that out, and then perhaps the state could come in and fund the rest of the program, maybe extending it up into Sandy or something like that. I don't know what the TIP match is. Is that 7%?
Yeah.
And then
the TIP program has 7% match.
And then the federal grants are typically 20%. And so, yeah, it kind of runs the gamut. But if we're looking at it like chunks by chunks, you know, maybe phase one, that's $12 million. And we're looking at, TIF active or something, then it's, you know, be a 40% match on that segment. So there's a lot of different angles and avenues that we could take. And so finally, we also wanted to look at, in terms of implementation, how we might get some immediate benefits. And one of the things that we learned is the city is already planning on a resurfacing for the corridor that's likely to be much more near term than we would be able to secure funding for the ultimate vision. So if the city is going to be coming in and resurfacing the roadway anyway, within the next 12 months, potentially,
yeah.
You know, what can we do to create some benefit, you know, in the near term? And so what we're proposing is a restriping reconfiguration. And so really what this would be is to little or no cost to the existing plan, would be to introduce the same lane configuration with 10-foot lanes as our preferred concept, and then adding the buffered bike lane in the shoulder area. And so the benefit here is, well, for one, it's consistent with what's already on the ground between Redwood and 1300 West. So there's already a precedent for it on the corridor. It makes the lane configuration and widths consistent with our concept, so you kind of ease people into that. And then you're adding comfort and safety for cyclists, giving them a little bit of extra room. It's not a huge improvement, but it's better than what's now on the ground. And then in effect, you're also bringing the vehicles further away from the sidewalk, and so you're creating a little bit more space between the pedestrians and the travel lanes. And so there's a little bit extra comfort to be gained from that. And then also we get the smooth pavement that people are really concerned about. No impacts to existing lane configuration. So there wouldn't be any impacts to, traffic operations. So I think that's it. So next steps, we've got the open house scheduled for December 11th. So scratch that tentatively. It's been established. And then we'll just be working on kind of wrapping the study up with final documentation and concluding the project early next year.
Can we comment a little bit? What are funding for the portions that we need to pay for? Dustin, what would you foresee is how we would fund our portion that we'd have to, that we don't? You know, it's either for the part that we have to match, or what would that look like?
That's where I would turn to my team of experts, Sunil and Don, and because it could be a combination of things. It could be general fund dollars. It could be things that we anticipate in the CIP. I'm not sure if there's any impact fees that would be eligible on this. I don't know, Sunil, what else can you think of that? I mean, we'd have to look to see where it would come from.
If we did coordinate it with an overlay or resurfacing, that could be kind of our match too, depending on the timing of everything.
Okay.
What's the likelihood of this match? I mean, there's like hopeful wish, but like really feet on the ground, if you had to bet on this matching happening, how confident
on getting the grant,
getting the grants, and getting the TIF money and the TIF and all those things?
It's a competitive arena because all the other cities are fighting for the same pot of money.
Right.
So it's highly competitive.
So the odds of us are getting it are 20%, 40%. I mean, just give a spitball.
It is so hard to say because it's hard to compare apples to oranges on what other entities' projects might be.
Right.
I think Don has a good.
Don spends a lot of time in that arena.
Don, give us a gut check.
Sure, we've got a magic wand. Mayor Ramsey will be very helpful.
Yes.
Politically.
Yes.
And the state trail money, that's the money that we're getting for Bingham Creek now. And that list is the fact that it's being looked at favorably and it's a regional trail. And frankly, it's an easier trail than a lot of other sections that are already on the list. I think it would, and they're looking for low hanging fruit projects, and it's $45 million a year that's coming into that. Well, it's 90 last year and $45 million a year going forward. So I think I think it would be looked at very favorably.
But it wouldn't be all at once. You'd be looking at a longer term.
Right.
Yeah, you might get a couple million a year. You're not going to see 20 million one year.
It's like we're getting 2 million for the first section of Bingham Creek Trail this year. Well, that's what we've been told.
And we may even have to break up segment one.
Correct.
Instead of doing the whole 12 million, just do one block or two blocks or whatever.
You could, do smaller sections.
And so as we're doing that, say we break it up and we accomplish three blocks. What's happening to the rest of Shields Lane? Is it shut down? Or are we putting...
We just block it and shut it up. No, I'm just kidding.
That's your district, right?
Every major intersection. Do a gas project.
We'll just do the best we can. If we have to resurface, we'll do what is suggested in the interim, or I don't know. We'll just have to look at that and see how it phases out.
Because we can't block it, obviously.
No.
I know you're kidding, but like we'd have to like put a bunch of detours and then kind of wait till we get more money, like...
Or temporary transitions of some sort,
Because, like, you could use those, like, Ballard things that you're talking about if we did do a resurfacing right now to kind of shrink down the lanes. They could get creative with those to make transition points.
And we try to go intersection to intersection to make the transition smooth. We wouldn't want to try and just... cut it off halfway through.
Yeah. Right in the middle of someone's driveway.
Yeah.
That wouldn't work very good for storm drainage either. So
to that point, could I ask another question, please? It seems to me my memory of 98th, there's not a lot of driveways except for when you get to the very east side. On the west side, it's those cinder block walls, right?
Right, that's right.
So at what point do we have driveways? Is it after Redwood?
It's from
13 to the east is where most of them are there.
There are between
Redwood and 13.
Okay.
That's even looking at the map, it looked like by staying to the south side, it dramatically reduces the number of driveways you're crossing.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of like one block subdivision type roads, but Yeah, you're not dealing with actual driveways as much on that south side.
There's a couple along there, but not,
yeah, not as many as like that north side is.
There's a lot more.
There's a lot.
On that stretch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Dustin, do you have anything you'd like to add or share what your thoughts are overall, or what do you think about the project?
I really appreciate the time and effort that's gone into doing this study and for the engagement that the public has given the team. I know that they've talked with a lot of people, and I think it's good to put some vision together. You saw that first map that they showed and how integral this is to the regional connectivity, which, going back to your point, helps when we go ask for grants, right?
Yes.
When we can show that it connects all those north-south trails and then ties in systems on both the west and the east side of the valley, that's good. And in that sense, it's a good project. As our community continues to grow, there's more demand for trails. And I think this fits in with your strategic priorities of the desirable open space and amenities. So I think it scores highly in your strategic priorities. And having that big vision where we can break this up and do it in pieces is probably the best approach to accomplishing it. If we waited till we had the full funding, I'll be honest, it'll never happen. If we can break it up into bite-sized pieces and do it in a very cohesive way, knowing that it's a project of phases, I think it can be very successful.
Please.
Just tying in with what Dustin was saying and what the consultants pointed out, you know, by starting off, you know, on the west side, having it tie into that new Bangor overpass interchange they're doing, and being able to do that section, I think it will help give resident buy-in that they see a section that's done, it's functional, and then expand it further east, that they'll go along kind of with the growing pains, the construction, a lot easier seeing a section that's fully functional.
When you're able to tie those schools together
and
get those on board, and that increases your users right off the bat, that will also create demand to finish the other phases.
Mm-hmm.
So that first phase starts at Bangor, is that where it starts?
Yeah.
So go east from Bangor.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but tying in directly into the kind of the landing of the new structure.
Mm-hmm. Would we be able to, sorry, go ahead. Go ahead, Kathy.
I was just going to say, I also think that having a dedicated bike lane like this that goes east and west will improve traffic and the safety of those people. I mean, just as a driver, I'm never going to ride my bike on because I don't even have a bike, but I want it for them. And I think our community would be very engaged in supporting that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that first map, I don't recall, I don't think it tied into 1300 West, but that's one of the bike corridors that goes through the whole valley on 1300th. Is it on there?
Yeah, it's shown as an existing AT facility.
I
on
can
that.
Go to the bigger.
So that's a really important connection there as well.
Where is it?
So
there is.
And if the canals get developed as pathways, that will really increase the viability of the whole area.
Excuse me, council member. But the other thing to keep in mind is something we found on Welby Jacobs Canal is, you know, once you build the trail, you don't see very many pedestrians on the trail, but then once you build the trail, it just blows up, you know, with pedestrian and bicycle use. Every time I walk the Welby Jacobs Canal now, I pass cyclists and people on scooters, and I think we would find definitely the same thing happen on Shields Lane.
Yeah,
that usage just go way up.
We looked at the Strava data on Welby Jacobs, and we found that before the improvement was made versus after, there's 37 times increase in users, just self-reported data. And we already know Shields Lane is pretty popular, you know, for bikes and pedestrians, kids walking to school for sure. And so we would expect something similar. If we can provide something that's really comfortable, there's a whole bunch of people that won't go out there now that would feel comfortable on a dedicated field facility like this.
I think it's also really important to note that crossing under I-15, without that being an interchange, is a really key piece of this in connecting it to the east side. As somebody who uses trails and roads to cross I-15 fairly frequently, that is a big deal going through a major intersection. If you have to try to cross at 106th or 90th, it is
scary.
Not good. This is a phenomenal opportunity to create that connection to our neighboring city.
And let's get Sandy to help lobby with us, right? Because that's going to give access. Could I make another comment?
Please, go ahead.
I feel like Kai and Tim, this presentation was so much more big picture than the last time you came. I don't know if you remember last time, I was not pleased. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Because it was so micro, and you've taken it and made it macro. So I appreciate that. You've given us a vision of why does this matter to the whole city? And before it felt like you were just talking about this micro Shields Lane, but this makes all the difference for all of the city. And so when you can show us why does this matter to everybody, that makes me more impressed as a representative of a certain part of the city. But it also, speaking generally, I think is gonna help our team, Don, the mayor, whoever, go and get these grants and funds, because that shows a bigger picture than what you showed us last time. So thank you. This is really well done.
Oh, thank you.
It makes it so people in your neighborhood could actually easily bike clear to the soccer stadium.
Yes. And so this goes the whole, it doesn't yet, but the potential is that this could go the whole width of our city.
Mm-hmm.
And so now you've got 90 plus thousand people buying in instead of just the people on Shields Lane. And that's why I really want to get feedback from more people than just those that reside on Shields Lane, because I think you're going to get a lot of different perspectives. I would hope you can get more at your open house that are going to commute onto Shields Lane.
Yeah, and we've been asking that question a little bit, right, Tim, of if people are on the corridor nearby or just citywide residents.
Yeah, we have a decent chunk of citywide residents.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay,
there's definitely more people showing
those
up.
Those who live on Shields are not necessarily the bikers, but
right.
We want them happy too.
Mm-hmm.
The bikers might be another mile and a half west that are trying to get to I-15. The last thing I just wanted to say is I'm interested in Strava. Did you say Strava data app?
Yeah.
I love it. That cracks me up.
Yeah, so the Strava, they have a separate platform called Strava Metro that they make the data, unidentified data, available to public agencies for this kind of use, planning purposes.
So the people with the app, you can look at their data.
We can... We don't know who they are, but
anonymous.
We can look. Yeah, we can look at the numbers and see. And they have data going all the way back to, I think, 2018. So you can look at trends.
That's fascinating.
And so that's how we were able to kind of uncover that with Bobby Jacobs. And we could do something similar with this project.
Love it. Thank you.
Question. So should we adopt this study as part of our master transportation plan or some other plan? Should this be part of something like that in a formal way?
I'm going to turn to some of my staff on that one to see where they think it fits in all of our other plans as far as where it gets adopted to.
We have a section in the transportation master plan on active transportation. Might not be a bad idea to roll that into our transportation.
I think if we're going after grants and other funding, that we'd have to have it adopted into one of our plans.
I just don't know, Stephen, if you think it fits into some of our other general plans, or Ray, if you think it fits in some of our...
Yeah, certainly through the process,
plans.
They've relied on some of the goals from the general plan. You saw some of those quotes in their presentations. The transportation master plan is an appendage to the general plan. So it certainly is part of it.
Sense there.
Yeah, and for the state funds for TIF Active and TTIF, I think it does need to be an adopted plan. Or I think it says state approved, and they basically what that means is they look and see if it's been adopted. It's pretty loose rule, but they do want to see that it's...
Jeremy and I'll talk, but maybe we'll bring back in a minute. We just adopted the transportation master plan, remember, but... We can certainly amend it and add this as an appendage or whatever we want, chapter or whatever.
And that plan did kind of, it didn't say what concept was going to be adopted on Shields Lane, but it did say that there's going to be an active transportation element on Shields Lane. Yeah. But it would be nice to be more specific in that active transportation plan. So I think that's a good idea.
It's a good question. We'll get the right spot figured out and bring it back to you.
With the schools that are there, there's two schools, is that right? On this
there's three. Yeah. Three schools. Yeah, if you go three. West of Bangor.
Oh, that's three. Right. That's right. So we got three. So what do we think that if we worked with the schools and they really, you know, to have, you know, that's going to increase safety for these schools too, for the students walking along there. Is that going to help us with our funding efforts as well? And what can we do to help with that process?
I think it's our responsibility.
Well, I'm not
safe walking.
I'm not saying we shift the responsibility, but I'm saying by them, you know, participating, not financially, but just participating and saying, hey, we could see the benefits of the safety.
From lobbying efforts.
From the standpoint
of supporting our safe walking routes
and
those kinds of things. I think the school district, I can't speak for them, but I think that they would be very supportive of that. As for actually giving funding to this,
No, I'm not. That's not what I said.
But
so,
support for it?
Yeah.
Because it supports our safe walking routes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, so let me rephrase my question. So if the schools help us by lobbying and make presents, are they going to be able to help us get funding? That's what I'm asking. Not that the school's giving us...
I don't think that it hurts.
Yeah.
I do think, you know, having those letters of support for this certainly helps when we do a grant application package.
Yeah.
More agencies that can support our grants,
the
better we are.
Because, again, it ties back to that regional effort. It ties back to the collaboration with other entities. And if they say, yeah, hey, we absolutely support this, it would be good for us.
Okay. So that's something that we'll put on our efforts to go reach out to the schools and have a plan to be able to engage them to so they can help us in those efforts.
Get all biking groups in the valley.
And Councilman Harris, the school district has been involved with part of the stakeholder committee.
Yeah.
So they're aware of this and they would be very supportive of this. And it would help strengthen our grant applications. And there's also like their Safe Route to School grant. And it's not big enough to fund this project. But
there's something there then, huh?
Yeah, and that's the thing is there's multiple grants that we could pursue to help offset the costs.
The reason I bring it up, I think that's a huge story to tell. We got three schools along that corridor right there. That's a huge story, you know, I mean, along with the trail systems. But yeah, but just say, hey, this is improved safety. I think that moves us up and when we're competing against these funds, I think that makes our case all that much stronger as the funds are competitive.
For sure.
One thing it also does is pedestrian bridges are famous for costing a lot and not getting a ton of use.
Mm-hmm.
So integrating a trail that moves people over Bangor on a pedestrian bridge that uses it year round, especially summer, those sort of things. Because UDOT's putting a pretty penny into that bridge.
Because a lot of times the pedestrian bridge is just going from one side of the road to the other, and it's hard to get to. This is a collector trail, for lack of a better word, to get people across at that point.
How many people will go over that?
Yeah. We did do, I don't have the number off the top of my head, but we did do some pedestrian counts, and we did collect counts on that old structure. And it was pretty high.
Yeah.
The usage, you know, for school children using that bridge is in the hundreds. I forget.
Yeah.
The number
it was.
And do you mind going back to the options that you had on the slide? I just want to make sure. I don't think we kind of got an informal nod from the council that it seems like everyone's liking three, but we ought to probably just make sure that's the case. It seemed like when we spoke last time you were here, things we're talking about, it seems like they're implemented in concept three, but is there anything that anyone would like to comment on concept three? But that's, you know, that was the recommendation from, you know, the people who attended the open house. But is there anything else that we need to talk about on here?
Well, I think three gives us the most bang for our dollars. It gives us the safety, and yet it's not requiring the destruction of both sides of the street.
If you want me to turn in.
Yeah.
At the last visit, my vote was to combine the two paths. rather than one on each side of the road, because then as you're driving down the road, I think it's going to create more safety. As if I'm a driver and I go, okay, the people are over here, the people over here, the bikes are over there, it helps you kind of compartmentalize. I also like that it's elevated. The difference between you and a car having a curb there is, I think, can cause a lot of bikers to feel a little more secure.
Yeah.
I hate riding a bike on a lane when somebody's rearview mirror is going to come up by and clip me. I have a neighbor that almost died because he was in a bike lane next to the cars, and the car driver just clipped him and practically killed him.
It's also easier from a maintenance standpoint because you got one trail to plow and things rather than you got to go down one side,
yeah,
turn around, come back out the other. We can use a bigger piece of equipment and just go down one way.
Yeah, and if you've got a parent with one of those big trailer bike things, I mean, just in case you've got a wider girth of a bike, you've got the space on the double.
Yeah, it definitely has its advantages there.
Yeah, so I do like the two combined on one side.
I like three. It gets, I was leaning to four, but I think there are a lot of good arguments for three, so.
Three was my preferred choice, and being at the open house, I did feel people, you know, the residents who were in attendance were leaning towards concept three, so I was glad to see that it won out and the actual data that was gathered as well.
Yeah, and I like three as well.
Yeah,
I want to make sure we touch base on that. Is there any feedback, you know, before we go to the open house that we need to provide, anything that we need that were changes or anything that we want to bring up, or do we feel that, hey, way three's proposed here, or we've given enough feedback, we've talked about funding, that we've gone over everything we need to do? Is there any last things we need, minute things we need to talk about? Okay. Well, it sounds like we have council support for concept three, and I think a lot of this is going to come down to being creative with our funding. And I think we, reason, you know, calling the schools, whoever else we can to, and I know the, you know, Don mentioned the, you know, the mayor has, you know, the mayor does a wonderful job in interacting with people. And so I think if we do things the right way, I think we'll be able to get some good funding to get this going.
And I also love that we're starting west by the pedestrian bridge. I really think that's a smart idea to bring it, like you were mentioning, to I-15. I think that makes sense rather than going the other direction. There's all the reasons to do it and move forward.
Okay. Anything else you'd like to add?
No.
Okay. Well, that is the end of our study meeting. We actually have some time.
You have a few minutes if you want to get another snack.
Yeah.
If not, we'll be able to get started right on time at 6:30 for our other meeting.
Okay, well, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn the study meeting.
So moved.
Okay, Jason, and second from Kathy. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Not a worry.